Orimono always have a sense of continuity and movement to them. Their colors and designs flow over the body, this often incorporating the wearer's anatomy into their design in such a tasteful manner that it's often easy to forget that one is gazing upon a person's naked body. This is in stark contrast to Yubori-style tattoos, Western-style tattoos, also known as wan pointo, one point. These tattoos are often placed upon the body without any serious regard to harmony, symmetry, anatomy, or final composition. With the exceptions of tribal and Celtic-style designs, Western-style tattoos usually have more emphasis placed upon the design, the design's meaning, the value that the design has to the wearer of the tattoo, than the design being an embellishment of the wearer's body. Many of the designs used for Orimono tattoos are actually not dragons, kanji lettering, or yin-yangs, as commonly thought by many people, but rather designs are based upon traditional imagery, such as indigenous plants and animals, like the lotus flower and the koi fish, as well as from Japanese mythology. James Stevens. Chapter 1. Devastation. The house was dark when Paul arrived home. It was unusual, as all the lights would normally be on, welcoming him. He walked closer to the house, and he could see the front door was ajar. His heart started to pound in his chest as he walked into the garage to pick up his baseball bat. He called to his wife and daughter, but there was no answer. He walked into the hall, then called out again, but nothing, apart from complete silence. Normally, when he came home, his wife and daughter were there ready to embrace him. He turned on the light in the hall, and then he could see spots of blood on the wooden floor. His first thoughts were that his daughter, Carrie, may have cut herself and would have been taken to the hospital. And his wife, Jane, who in her haste forgot to ensure that the door had been closed properly behind her. But wait. Knowing his wife, she would have phoned him. Even in her panic state, she would have phoned to let him know what hospital to where they would have gone. After all, she had had to do it many times before, as her daughter suffered from hemophilia. With this thought in mind, he started to fear the worst. He was now extremely concerned. Were there intruders? Were they still inside the house? No, surely not. There were no signs of a struggle. They lived in a respectable neighborhood, and they had no enemies. But what if he had made some? Did he upset one of his customers? Did he screw up their tattoo? He thought long and hard. No, never. And besides, none of his clients knew where he lived. He continued to walk around the downstairs rooms, turning on the lights as he went. There was nothing, not even a trace of a break-in. Paul walked back into the hall. The blood spots seemed to be leading upstairs. He stopped at the foot of the stairs, his heart still pounding. He felt breathless and he knew he should call the police, but he couldn't. It could be just a false alarm. Slowly he started to climb the stairs. The blood spots were more frequent the nearer he got to the top. As he approached the landing, there were pools of blood. His heart sank and he feared the worst, as he could see bloody footprints leading from the bedroom toward the bathroom. He turned on the lights at the landing and crept slowly towards his and Jane's bedroom. The door was open. It was dark inside. He called her name. Still no reply. Reaching the door, Paul gripped the bat firmly, took a deep breath, and burst in, hoping that his wife was just resting. The door flew open and he reached for the light, switching it on. "Jesus Christ! No!" he screamed, dropping the bat and rushed to the bed. Jane was prone on the bed, naked from the waist down. Her wrists were tied to the bedpost. There was a single bullet wound to her head, and the bedclothes were saturated with her blood.